I'm always making it really tough on Al and picking songs. I think I redeemed myself this morning. I think I made it too easy. But anyway, appreciate our being able to lift our voices up in praise to God together, and to be able to remember and to think upon this idea of being a friend of Jesus. Now, in being a friend of Jesus, and the title of our lesson is, we're going to be looking at it from this perspective, and that is from the idea of being a friend to a king, being a friend to, actually, the king. When Jesus spoke to the apostles here, and he talked about that he was going to call them friends, and that he was going to address and identify and address, maybe would be the proper syntax, but we find that he was identifying them as to who they are and what they have become to him, and then as well, what that means. And he gives some insight into that idea and that meaning of being his friend, as being a king, that I'm not sure that they fully grasp at this point, but that's okay. Jesus understood that, and he talked about that he had talked to them about things that they hadn't fully grasped. He said, but you will someday, just like Ed was pointing out there this morning. Now if they look back and they can go, oh, yeah, now we see, what we have done and what that was all about and why we even did that and why Jesus did the things that he did. And so we find that be similar with this event. But this idea of being a friend with the king. The wise man said back in Proverbs 22:11, he says, he who loves purity of heart and whose speech is gracious will have the king as his friend. And so when he was saying that, of course, he was saying here that here's a great benefit. Here's a wonderful result of being the kind of person that God has called you to be, and that God created us to be, and then helps, to develop us in restoring and becoming and being more like what He has called upon us to be. But He says, so this kind of individual, this kind of individual that's going to win, the affection, it's going to win the admiration, even of kings. And so when he says that, the idea is, well, here's a big reward. Here's a big reason for doing that, you see. And so there is, even among us who do not have a king as far as our government goes, that we do have a, recognition and an admiration for that idea of kings. I mean, there's even in this country some kind of fascination, interest, however you might want to, describe it, even in England's royalty. We're interested in princesses and princes and dukes and lords and kings and queens. Those that are designated by, those titles, even in another country, even in, on the European continent. And so when a prince and his wife, move here and live out here, not all that far from us, that makes headlines. People are interested in that kind of thing. So I really don't have, much expectation of ever being invited over to Harry's and Meghan's. But can I be a friend? Can you be a friend of the king? Of a king? Wouldn't that be something? We see that back in the days of David, when David was king, it says that Hushai, David's friend, over in 2 Samuel 15:37. Speaking of Hushai, we find he says the Archite was the king's friend. So he's David's friend, but designates and helps us to see who we're talking about here when we're talking about David. He's the king. He's the king of Israel. And this individual is described as being a friend to the king. We find the son of David, Solomon, he also had a friend. It says, and Azariah, the son of Nathan, was over the officers, and Zabud, the son of Nathan, was chief minister and the king's friend. And so we find that kings, you know, certainly have friends. They enjoy the same kind of thing that we enjoy from the idea of having friendship. Having someone, you know, that's near and dear to us. Someone who is a friend. But, you know, not everyone who was close to the king could actually be trusted to be the king's friend. You know, the idea used to kind of be, you know, even if you were going to go in to assassinate the king, one of the things you want to realize is when you go in, you want to say, long live the king. You don't go in there saying, I'm going to assassinate the king, because then there might be loyal followers, or his friend might be in the court of the king, and go, no, you're not, you know. And so, you know, you need to kind of go in there stealthy and pretend like, you know, that you're a friend of the king, even if you're not, even if you're going to take, you know, his life. And so we find here description of Hushai to be a friend of the king is quite significant. We find in that passage that talked about Hushai actually being a friend of the king, we find that another individual was mentioned. Now, we notice here it says, and Absalom and all the people and the men of Israel came to Jerusalem, and Ahithophel was with him. Well, Ahithophel, I didn't put all the verse on there for room, but he's mentioned right there as being a counselor of David in the very same verse that it's mentioned there, how that Hushai is the friend of David. And so he stands right there in the same court, in the same company, as the friend of David, the king. But he's not a friend of the king. In fact, when Absalom rebelled and tried to usurp the kingdom, we read here, Ahithophel went on Absalom's side. He went with Absalom. He threw his loyalty to Absalom. We read here that was quite significant, because Samuel's record here in 2 Samuel 16 and 23, and not written necessarily by Samuel, but included within the writings of Samuel, says, in the counsel of Ahithophel, which he gave in those days, was if a man inquired at the oracle of God. So was all the counsel of Ahithophel, both with David and with Absalom. I don't know why his mother couldn't have named him something like David instead of Ahithophel. You know, sounds almost like I'm sneezing, doesn't it? But anyway, those are the names that are given him. But the point is that he was a wise counselor. And for him to go over to Absalom was significant. In fact, we find here in the 17th chapter then of 2 Samuel, says, moreover, Ahithophel said unto Absalom. Now remember, Absalom's usurping the kingdom. He's trying to take his father out of being king. He says, let me now choose out 12,000 men, and I will arise and pursue after David this night, and I will come upon him while he is weary and weak-handed, and will make him afraid, and all the people that are with him shall flee. And I will smite the king only. And I will bring back all the people unto thee. The man whom thou seekest is as if all return, so all the people shall be in peace. And so he gives this counsel. And we just read where the chronicler says how that he gives really wise counsel, just like he's reading, you know, prophecy from God, guidance and instruction from God. And in fact, his counsel here is really good. In fact, if Absalom had followed his counsel, David would have been dead. But Hushai steps up. And he says, no, his counsel's not good this time. He says, he's a wise man and he gives good counsel, but not this time. And he convinces Absalom otherwise. Because he's the friend of David, you see. And we find then that he sends word out, and it says, "And it came to pass after they were departed that they came up out of the well." That's the people that Hushai had sent to warn David. "And went and told King David, and they said unto David, Arise ye and pass over quickly over the water, for thus has that guy counseled against you." Sometimes it just doesn't come. So, Ahithophel did counsel. I just had to say that. So you can see. All right. Did counsel against you. And Hushai is the one. And it sure been easy if his mother named him Sam. But, you know, even him, we might call him Hugh. Yeah. Hugh's a good, solid name. So Hugh, you know, sent this word to David and warned him and saved David's life because David had a friend in the court of the king. Now, we find that when Judas came to Jesus in the garden, and we know, you know, here is where he's actually betraying him, you know, and he kisses him saying, you know, one whom I kiss is the one whom you want to arrest. Well, when he came, Jesus said, "Friend, wherefore art thou come?" Friend? Judas? A friend? Well, I thought maybe Ahithophel was too, right? Because he gets to stand in the king's court, he gets to counsel the king, but he wasn't a friend, was he? And Judas wasn't either. We'll see that a little bit more. We'll use that here in a moment, come to a little better understanding here of the use of that word friend there. Now, there's also scripture talking about a friend of God. And who's greater than God? I mean, you know, the King of Kings, right? And so Abraham, thy friend, the chronicler says in 2 Chronicles 20:7, referring back to Abraham, speaking of David, or speaking of Abraham, he says, "But thou, Israel, my servant, Jacob, whom I have chosen, the seed of Abraham, my friend." This time God even says it. God says, he's my friend. He was my friend. So Abraham was friend of God, and the scripture was fulfilled, which saith, "And Abraham believed God, and it was reckoned unto him for righteousness, and he was called the friend of God." So we see here then that God also looks for friends. God the Father, the Godhead, and enjoys that type of relationship. And even speaks of one like Abraham, as of Abraham, as being his friend. He says, "Abraham, he's my friend." Can you imagine for God to say, "This is my friend"? I mean, it's one thing, you know, for some celebrity to say, "Hey, you know, that's my buddy out there. Come up here. I want you on the stage with me. I want everybody to know, you know, that you're my friend. We grew up together, or, you know, you rescued me," or something like that, you know. And so now we have this friendship. Well, everybody knows the celebrity. That's because that's the idea of that word celebrity, isn't it? He's known. He's famous. She, he, whoever. But we find there then that when they call us up and say, "Well, this is my friend, a nobody." Well, who's that? You know, kind of like the old joke. You know, who's that? And I don't know who the guy is in all that fancy garb, but the guy standing next to him. And just ask Paul, he'll tell you the joke sometime. And so, except in this case, people go, "Who is that? Who did this person call their friend?" All the reporters would be out there Googling you, wouldn't they? Trying to figure out, who is this person, you know, that this celebrity calls their friend? What did it mean for God to call Abraham friend? The 18th chapter of Genesis gives us some insight into this. We find here in the 18th chapter, God announces the upcoming birth of Isaac. And the Lord here, Jehovah, has a conversation with Abraham. And then at the end of the conversation, we find that the other two, the angels that are with the Lord, they get up and they go on. And they're going to Sodom and Gomorrah. I'm going to just read some selected verses here from this, but we notice here, picking up at verse 17, Genesis 18, 17, "And Jehovah said, Shall I hide from Abraham that which I do? Seeing that Abraham shall surely become a great mighty nation, and all the nations of the earth shall be blessed in him. For I have known him to the end that he may counsel his children and his household after him, that they may keep the way of Jehovah, to do righteousness and justice to the end, that Jehovah may bring upon Abraham that which has been spoken of him. And Jehovah said now to Abraham, because the cry of Sodom and Gomorrah is great, and because their sin is very grievous, I will go down now and see whether they have done altogether according to the cry of it, which has come unto me. And if not, I will know. Here's God telling Abraham his plans. What business is this of Abraham's? And why does Abraham need to know this? Well, God says, well, he's my friend. I trust him. I know him. And so I want to tell him about this. And we might understand some of the significance of that when we understand a lot that's there and such. We're going to jump a few verses here. We drop down here then to the 27th verse. And Abraham answered and said, behold, now I have taken upon me to speak unto the Lord, who am but dust and ashes. I'm insignificant. You know, I'm just dirt. You made me from that dirt. And peradventure, there shall lack 5 of the 50 righteous. Wilt thou destroy all the city for the lack of 5? And God, being the He here, said, I will not destroy it if I find there 40 and 5. And you're probably familiar with these events, and they continue on. We jump down here to the 32nd verse. And he said, oh, speak ye yet but this once. And he said, oh, let not the Lord be angry, and I will speak yet but this once. Peradventure 10 shall be found there. And he, that's God again, of course, said, I will not destroy it for the 10's sake. And we know how Abraham, you know, went through this number. But would you destroy it if you have 50 righteous? And say, well, who's Abraham to think he can talk to God and bargain with God and make some kind of deal with God? He says, what? I'm just dust and ashes. But you see, God had seen fit to bring Abraham into the council, into God's counsel, and to let him know his intentions and what he is doing. So, friends of Jesus, as we turn back again to the 15th chapter of John, Jesus is already Lord and soon will be the King. And these apostles are, at this time even, friends with Jesus in a very special way. And let me see if I can explain this. I'll try to do the best that I can. Judas was called a friend, wasn't he? We saw there. Now, the word that is used there for friend by Jesus when he calls Judas a friend, it's a different word than the word that he uses for friend when he talks to the apostles. And that word can mean friend. This is my friend, and it be that way. You know, we're buddies, we're pals, you know, whatever. But it's also used to speak of an associate, a fellow comrade, or simply as a kindly address. Like there in Matthew chapter 22 and verse 12, you remember when Jesus told the parable about the king having the wedding feast. And he comes in and he finds a man without a garment on. And he says, friend, how did you get in here without a wedding garment? He calls him friend, you see. But it's that same word that Jesus used to call Judas friend. In other words, it's a kindly address. It's an associate, a comrade maybe. But here, probably just more kindly address. He probably doesn't even know the individual, but he addresses him as friend. And then again there in Matthew 20 and in verse 13, when Jesus taught the parable about, you know, the vineyard owner going out throughout different times of the day and hiring different people to work in his vineyard, and at the end of the day he pays them all the same. And one of the guys that was right there at the beginning sees everybody else getting paid all the same, even the person only worked an hour, and he complains. He goes, so why are you paying them what, you know, you're paying us? Maybe he apparently thought he was going to get even more. And in the parable, Jesus says, "Friend, I am doing you no wrong. Did you not agree with me for a denarius, friend?" And so that's that kindly address that Jesus used for, like, even Judas. But the friends of the apostles, calling the apostles these friends. That word is a word that actually comes from, you know, phileo, that we have, you know, brotherly love, brotherly kindness. It means love, dear, devoted. And if you go back to the third chapter of John and the 29th and 30th verses, you find John the Baptizer using that word, speaking of, illustrating his relationship with the Lord. And so he says here at verse 29, "He that hath the bride is the bridegroom, but the friend of the bridegroom that standeth and hears him rejoices greatly because of the bridegroom's voice. This my joy therefore is made full. He must increase, but I must decrease." John here says, my joy shall, you know, be made full in knowing that the Lord rejoices. The Lord is happy. And so John considers himself a friend of the Lord, a close, you know, dear friend. In fact, we would say there for that word friend, because that's just the word loved or dear one, we might say best man. So the best man of the bridegroom. And so John uses that word to describe his relationship with the Lord. In the 11th chapter of John, and in the 11th verse, Jesus said, "These things spake he, and after this he said unto them, Our friend Lazarus is fallen asleep, but I go that I may awake him out of sleep." Now, you recall where, you know, both Mary and Martha said, you know, "Lazarus, whom you loved." Well, that's very, that word shares in this root word that Jesus uses here that's translated friend. It's the same word that John the Baptizer used as well there as talking about his relationship with the Lord. That he is like the best man at a wedding. He is this close, trusted friend of the Lord. And Jesus says that Mary, or that Lazarus and Mary and Martha were the friends of he and his disciples, of he and the apostles in that way. He says they are very dear and devoted friends to us. And so now in John 15, we find that Jesus is speaking in regard to this idea of sharing something with them, to give them an understanding of something that Judas didn't have. Because these are now the faithful among the apostles. And as being the faithful among the apostles, Jesus wants them to understand in this relationship that he's about ready to share some things with them. And why would he share them with them? Because he is Lord. He is going to be King. And they don't have to have this information necessarily. They will if the Lord, you know, wants this to continue and work out. But he can do this later even. But at this point, they still aren't getting it fully. In fact, that's a lot of what he's talking about here in these last chapters of John, the night before he was crucified. And so we find here that Jesus then, you know, states to them, "No longer do I call you slaves or servants, for the servant knows not what his Lord does, it's going to do. But I have called you friends, for all things that I heard from my Father I have made known unto you." I call you friends. Why? Because I... Now wait. Does that sound familiar? Remember Abraham? God said. Now there he doesn't say, now my friend, but it's the same thing. He's already recognized Abraham was his friend, where we've already seen that. And referring back to that relationship God had with Abraham, God said, Abraham was my friend. And so God says, shall I go and do this and not share this with Abraham, what I'm about ready to do, knowing him? And God is actually bringing Abraham into the council of the king, you see, to give him information and insight that is known only from the throne of God, that's known only from the throne of a king. And so Jesus is telling the apostles here, the faithful, he says to them, he says, I want you to understand that I identify you as friends of the court. You are now being brought into the court of the king, and you're hearing information and you're getting knowledge that you wouldn't know if the king didn't tell you. And the king wouldn't tell you except that he considers you his friend. The Godhead trusts you. The Father and I, we have confidence in you. And we will share this with you. And so understand that about being a friend of Jesus. And we see that addressing the apostles here, but he's addressed John the Baptist was seen as a friend of Jesus. Lazarus and his sisters were seen as friends of Jesus. We see then that being a friend of Jesus means, one, that we get insight that the rest of the world doesn't really get. Oh, they can read it, yes, it's here. But they don't get it because they don't see it as coming from the throne of the king. Now, we find that being brought into, you know, the courts of the king to hear conversations that only a few are privy to, that makes us friends, but friends of the king means being friends of the court, being able to be in the court side of God. Now, being friends is something that is determined by the king. The king decides who will be his friends. The king chooses. Notice 16th verse of John 15. You did not choose me, but I chose you and appointed you that you should go and bear fruit and that your fruit should abide. You did not choose me, I chose you. And so to be a king of the friend means to be chosen. Now, we could look at, our time's up, but we could go back and we could, you know, look at some passages to talk about, many are called, but few are chosen. Okay. So I have chosen you to be my friend. So this is a special privilege. The Lord Himself chooses for those to be His friends. Being friends of the court has its privileges. John chapter 15, verse 16, we didn't read all that verse when he said, I chose you. You didn't choose me, I chose you. But notice there the last of that verse says, he says, that whatsoever you shall ask of the Father in my name, he may give you. Here's a special benefit. What you ask of the Father in my name, he will give you. The Hebrew writer, in talking about the high priesthood of Jesus Christ, discusses it several times. But notice here in the 10th chapter of Hebrews, begin at verse 19. Having therefore, brethren, boldness to enter into the holy place by the blood of Jesus, by the way which he dedicated for us, a new and living way through the veil, that is to say his flesh, and having a great priest over the house of God, let us draw near with a true heart, in faith, in fullness of faith, having our hearts sprinkled from an evil conscience, and having our body washed with pure water. Let us hold fast the confession of our hope, that it waver not, for he is faithful that promised. Being a friend of the court has special privileges. You get insight, you get knowledge, you get understanding of what the Lord is seeking to do. You get to come before the king. You get to ask of the king that the things you will ask in my name, coming into before the throne of God with boldness, with the blood of Christ, having that effectual, you know, blood, that sacrificial blood of his life, so that we now can enter into the court of the king. But there's something else about being a friend of the king. And that is, that means we need to understand that your friend is king. It's not just any old buddy-buddy, any old pal, but he's king. John 15 and 14, he says, "You are my friends if you do the things that I command you. You are my friends if you do the things that I command you." We must devote our loyalty and our service to the king. We understand that he is king. He may call us friends, but we are still duty-bound to him. We still answer to him. He is still Lord. He just says, "You're not that slave. I'm bringing you into the court of the king. I'm allowing you to know things that you wouldn't know without being this friend." Now, this loyalty and this service is not understood by those who are not the king's friend, even though they can read all these things, know these things as well. Notice John 15, beginning at verse 17. "These things I command you, that you may love one another." But there again is a command. You know, why does he command? Because he's king. You're a friend of the king. "If the world hates you, you know that it hated me before it hated you. If you were of the world would love its own. But because you are not of the world, but I chose you out of the world, therefore the world hates you. Remember the word that I said unto you, a servant is not greater than his Lord. If they persecuted me, they will also persecute you. If they kept my word, they will keep yours also. But all these things will they do unto you for my name's sake, because they know not him that sent me." So you see, the Lord loves you. He loves you enough to have died for you. But you, if you're not a faithful Christian, you're not a friend of the court. You might be called a friend, but in that capacity, that's not really a compliment. That's stating what, in a sense, could have been. Back to Matthew 22, we pick up at verse 11. It says, "But when the king came in and to behold the guests, he saw there a man who had not on a wedding garment. And he said unto him, Friend," well, that's, remember, the same word that he used speaking to Judas, he used to the laborers of the vineyard and such, "how camest thou in hither, not having a wedding garment?" And he was speechless. Then the king said to the servants, "Bind him hand and foot, and cast him out into the outer darkness. There shall be the weeping and the gnashing of teeth. For many are called, but few are chosen." Now, the king has actually given us the insight that we need to have in order to be considered to be a friend of his. To not just be called, but to be chosen. And he sends out an invitation for those to become his friends and to be a part of the blessings and the honor of being a friend of the king. And he calls upon those who have answered that call himself, that invitation of his, to invite others to say, he wants you, he loves you, he died for you. And you can be his friend, his intimate, dearly devoted, loyal servant friend. He invites you to come, and so do we. Being partakers of this, we know the joy and the blessings and the wonders of it. And we say, won't you too come? And so we say, come, as we stand and as we sing.